Have you had the experience of leaving the place where you grew up and then returning to find it's at the same time both exactly the same and completely different? Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Author Mary McNear is our first guest today. She's from with us from San Francisco. We're going to be talking to her about her new novel. It's called The Secrets We Carried. And in it, she writes about what it's like to come home after a long absence. Mary is a New York Times and USA Today bestselling author. She has six novels and one novella, all of them part of the Butternut Lake series. So maybe you're familiar with that series. If it appeals to you, why does it? Or maybe why doesn't it? What was it like for you to return home after being away for a long time? I hope you'll become part of the conversation. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Mary McNear, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Larry, thank you so much for inviting me on your show. I'm really excited.
Well, it's great to be able to talk with you. And before we even get into the book, let's talk about you for a minute. You know, you, like a lot of people, wanted to be a writer when you were younger.
I did. Yeah.
But you put that aside. Why'd you do that?
Well, you know, honestly, Larry, I don't think I had the courage to be a writer because I just lacked that basic faith in myself for so many years. And then I came to this turning point in my life. Do you want me to talk a little bit about that?
Sure, why not?
So when my first child, my son, who's now 24, was 3 years old, he was diagnosed with an autistic spectrum disorder. And at the time, I was in a PhD program, not a writing PhD program. And I thought, you know, I knew I was going to have to drop out of the program because obviously it was, we had to make a huge commitment to him just in terms of our energy and time and resources. And I thought, you know, I have to do one thing every day that's for me, even if I only do it for an hour. And I thought, you know, you always wanted to write a novel, so every single day you have to spend an hour writing one. And of course, there were many days where I would literally write for 5 minutes at a time, 12 times that day, right? Like it was so much more difficult than I thought it would be. But the novel that I started, I was actually in a waiting room of a speech and language therapist's office while my son was inside. That eventually became the first book in the series, which is Up a Butternut Lake. So it eventually paid off, but it was many years of hard work. As I said, sometimes 5 minutes at a time.
Well, it's a wonderful story, and the result has been great. You have wonderful six books.
Thank you so much. I have so enjoyed writing them, and I can't tell you how deeply connected the series is to Wisconsin.
Well, I have to tell you that what caught my attention at first when I just saw a blurb about the series, I thought immediately of Butternut, Wisconsin and Butternut Lake. And it's in northern Wisconsin. And
right.
I can remember, I have a great memory of fishing with a very good friend, and he caught a very large muskie on Butternut Lake.
I know.
So I immediately assumed you were writing about Butternut Lake, Wisconsin.
I know. No, actually, as things turned out, I grew up in Chicago, but we spent every summer at a cabin in a lake in northwestern Wisconsin. My great grandfather had built the cabin during the Depression, and my mother and her brother and sister still own it together. So we still go for a couple weeks every summer. And I don't know if you're familiar with the Hayward Lakes region.
Oh yes.
Yeah. So it's that's the closest kind of, you know, real town is Hayward. But when I decided to write this series, I wanted to name the lake Butternut Lake because for years we had driven through Butternut, Wisconsin, on our way to the cabin. And I always thought, oh, that's the best name because it just sounds so delicious, right? Like, what could be better than butter wrapped in a nut, right? But I didn't want to set it in a real town because, you know, then you just have to worry about getting all the details right, and people will say, well, I've been to Butternut, Wisconsin, and there is no coffee shop by that name. So instead, I checked Minnesota, because if you've spent a lot of time in northern Wisconsin, you know it actually looks a lot like northern Minnesota.
Oh, yes.
Right? No disrespect to Wisconsin. So I felt like I could write convincingly about that part of the country, and I discovered that while Minnesota has three lakes named Butternut, which is just lazy, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I know they have, like, you know, whatever, 10,000 lakes, but come on. It has three lakes named Butternut, but no town named Butternut. So I thought, well, I'll just set it in Minnesota. But really, it's Wisconsin that's closest to my heart.
So you wrote about, so you decided to write about something you knew about, I guess.
Well, I did, but also, you know, when I have not been spending my summers near this small town in Wisconsin, I've always lived in a big city. And so I think I had that outsider's fascination with small town life. I mean, I have always had a fantasy about living year-round in a small town. So I thought, you know, I want to write about these people because I thought, you know, there's so much that they know about each other, but there's also so much they don't know about each other. And I realized it was what they don't know about each other that I really wanted to explore in these novels. So kind of like the small town, big secrets idea, you know?
I know. How did the one book become, well, first it was a trilogy, now it's a six-book series.
That's right. So what happened is I just wrote the one book, and I didn't obviously sell it for publication until after I'd written it. So I had no idea. Like, as far as I knew, it would be a standalone. But when the publishing company, HarperCollins, said that they would buy it as part of a trilogy, I was so excited because I thought, you know, I was going to miss the people in it. And writing a series is almost like every time you start a book, it's almost like meeting an old friend for coffee. But, Larry, I also felt very strongly that I wanted each of the books to be able to stand alone. So I wrote them that way. And the reason I did is because often I'll just, like, especially when I'm in an airport, I'll just grab a book, you know, from the newsstand. And I don't like it when I jump into the middle of the series and feel like I practically need a map to understand what's happening. So I thought that will never happen in this book, this series. You can read any of the books in any order. Read one, read them all. It doesn't matter.
And, you know, different characters in each of the books.
They do. They kind of characters dip in and out.
Yeah.
But interestingly enough, in the last book, I had all new characters and just one recurring character, who is Caroline Keegan, the woman who owns Pearls, which is the coffee shop in town. And I felt like, since it was the last book in the series, I felt like we needed to bring her in to take a final bow, right? Because she's such a pivotal character. And then, of course, every small town needs a good coffee shop. Can we agree on that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's where you go to find out what's going on in the community. That and the local bar.
Exactly. So, yeah, so I felt like the series could not close without her in the novel. But it was so much fun because I think I fell in love with these people. And every time I wrote another novel, I got to visit them again. What could be better, right?
Absolutely. Mary McNear, our guest today, New York Times bestselling author, her latest in this six-book series, the Butternut Lake novels. This one's titled The Secrets We Carried. And maybe you've read some of the Butternut Lake books. I wouldn't be surprised as you listen in today. I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments, maybe about the book, the series itself, or maybe just questions about writing and what it takes to do it. Give a call. The number is 1-800 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. So each book obviously has a totally kind of, even though it's the same place, the topics are completely different. Where do you get the inspiration for the stories?
Well, that's a good question. You know, I mean, I think my goal in writing the series is I definitely wanted to write escapist pleasure. You know, I definitely wanted this to be the kind of book that you threw into your suitcase as you were packing to go away to the cabin for a weekend, right?
Yeah.
I wanted each book to have a core of emotional realism. So what actually gave my, what gave me my idea for the first novel, I wrote it during, you know, when the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq were still relatively new. And I had seen a local news story on a young woman who lived, at the time I was living in San Francisco, who lived in the San Francisco Bay Area. And she and her son had recently lost her husband and her son's father. He was part of the California National Guard. So they did a story on her, and it broke my heart. And I remember after the piece ended, I thought, you know, well, I'll probably never find out what happens to them, right?
Yeah.
And so I started thinking about writing about that, and for some reason I kept getting this image in my mind of a mother and her young son arriving in a cabin late at night, and I realized that in my story, you know, and in the journey my characters would take, that's where the story would begin. With them returning to a place where Allie, the main character, had spent her childhood summers. Only now she's recovering from this devastating loss. And of course, we know that whether she wants to be drawn in by the local townspeople, she will be, right? Because
yeah.
You cannot live in a small town without becoming part of the town yourself.
It's an amazing story, to be perfectly honest, as is your latest, The Secrets We Carried. And let's talk about the latest for a few minutes. Tell us about that plot.
So, you know, it's interesting. I wanted to do something a little darker and a little edgier. And when I say that, it's still Butternut Lake, right? So it's not, you know, the gritty realism is not, you know, I figure if you want gritty realism, you can watch Breaking Bad, right?
Yeah.
This is not that. But I did kind of wanted to respond to what people seem to want now, which is something a little darker. So I wrote a book about, it's not a mystery exactly. It's not a whodunit. We know what happened. But what we really don't know is the why done it. So I centered it around a tragedy, and actually this happened because I was doing research for one of my earlier books, and I was trying to figure out, you know, what time the ice, the ice was freezing out in this fictional community, and what time it would be breaking up, the ice on the lake, and I stumbled across some articles about people who had driven out onto Midwestern lakes too late in the season, right, when the ice was not strong enough. And fortunately, in most of those articles, people were rescued or saved, you know, even though their cars or trucks went through the ice. But occasionally, they weren't. And I started thinking about that, and I thought, you know, the most likely people to do something like that are young people, right, who we know are not always blessed with good judgment. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So those young people became the main character, Quinn LaPointe. Those were her classmates in the spring of her senior year. And in the novel, one of them was her current boyfriend. So we know how he died, but what we don't know is all the things that happened that led up to his decision to drive his pickup truck out onto the ice. So I kind of thought of it as I wanted reading the novel to feel like peeling an onion. Like in every scene, you should learn more, right, and get mm-hmm. closer to the core of what happened. Although maybe that's not a good analogy, since onions don't have cores. Maybe peeling an apple would be better. So I wanted to challenge myself, and I hope the reader too.
Well, you know, there are a lot of secrets being kept by a lot of people in your book. Do you think secrets are destructive?
I mean, I think they can be. I think some secrets are necessary, right? Like, for instance, in a marriage, do you really want to know every single detail about your partner's life before you met each other, right?
No.
You may think you do, but, you know, you might be disappointed, really, to find out everything. So I thought, you know, some secrets are maybe not necessary to keep. Maybe it's just more considerate to keep them. But in this case, I think what happened is several of the characters in the novel are keeping a secret, and I think it's preventing them from moving forward in their lives. And those kinds of secrets are the kinds of secrets we need to confront or we need to tell, you know, because often they're so weighted down by guilt, right, which, as you know, can be a very destructive emotion.
Mary McNear, our guest today, she is the author of the Butternut Lake novel series. You have 6 books out. The latest is The Secrets We Carried. Join in with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller, Kate Archer-Kent, our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer, here on the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest, Mary McNear, she is the author of The Secrets We Carried, part of the Butternut Lake novel series. It's the 6th and final in the series, so great to have her along. I wish we'd had her on to talk about some of the earlier ones as well. I can't believe I missed out on them. Anyway, you have questions for her about the series itself or about writing. I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And we'll take some calls. Actually, Bill in Waukesha is calling in. Let's go there. Bill, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello. This is kind of a surprise. By sheer coincidence, my grandparents owned a tavern in Butternut back. Oh, I think they bought it like in 1962.
Oh.
And it was called the Log Cabin Bar.
Oh,
and
how wonderful.
The bar room itself was an actual full face, you know, not the face logs, but the full log cabin. And so, the living quarters were in back. And to locate it, it was kind of like go up Highway 13, go down, take a right down the main drag, and then at the where the bank was on the corner, turn right, and like the second place in on the right, that's where it was.
And it was one of the original log cabins, the actual logs, Mary. And there are a few of those still in.
Yes, there are. Now, is it still standing?
Last I heard, but somebody had purchased it, and they tried adding a second story to the living quarters, and of course it all settled.
Right. Oh, what a shame, because those buildings are becoming more rare, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yes, and I heard while I was at a bike shop in Waukesha that someone who knew the owner of the bike shop said he was thinking of buying this bar or this place that was a bar up in Butternut, and I go, said about being a log cabin, I go.
Small world, Bill.
It is a small world. Oh, that must be an amazing building.
Oh, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. That's one of the. You do a nice job, and probably, well, because of the amount of time you spent in a town like Butternut.
Well, you know, I borrow from real life whenever I can. And speaking of log cabin buildings, so the small town, and when I say small, I mean it was too small to use as a model for Butternut because it's less than 500 people. But there's a town called Cable, Wisconsin.
Oh, I know Cable.
You know Cable?
I know all those towns. I have a cabin with some friends in Bayfield, Wisconsin.
Cable, then. It's kind of that small town with the big heart. So Cable has, it's one of only two log cabin libraries in the United States. And if you ever go to Cable, this library is so adorable. You cannot believe it's real. But it was a log cabin that has been converted into a library. And it is the real deal. And it's just one of my favorite places to go when we visit there. But, Larry, we also, no trip to our cabin would be complete without a day trip to Bayfield. In fact, there's a restaurant there, Maggie's, right?
Oh, yeah. I spent many evenings in Maggie's.
Well, the black and blue burger is right up there among my favorite meals. So I'm glad we have that connection.
Bill, thanks again. Let's go to Mona in Madison next. Hi, Mona. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thank you. First of all, it caught my attention at the very beginning because my husband's family is from Chicago, and his grandfather built a house up on Moose Lake during the Depression. So we're very familiar with that whole Hayward area, Cable and everything else. But my question is, are your books thought-driven or character-driven, and which do you think of first before you write?
You know, that is such an interesting question. I think even before the character and the plot, I think about, I wanted every novel to explore a different kind of challenge that a woman might have, and men too. But I guess that was why in the first one I explored widowhood. I also explored divorce, single parenthood, domestic abuse, accidental death, but I try to do it in a way that's not downbeat. I mean, to the extent that that's possible. And I'm not ashamed to say that my books have a happy ending because I think I wish life had more happy endings. But that is so interesting. I guess I try to sort of, like I said, I want to have this core of emotional truth. So I think about a theme that I can explore, but if you're going to explore it in a way that's compelling, then you need to have a compelling character who's having this experience. So I guess to that extent, they're probably more character than plot driven. Because of the kind of the person's journey is more of an emotional journey than a literal journey, because most of the novel takes place inside this small town, right? So I'm not taking my characters to exotic locales. They're not going to ride an elephant in Thailand. they might go on a picnic on an island in Butternut Lake. But to me, I mean, that is exciting. You know, just all of our lives are much more interesting, I think, than any of us can ever imagine,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Mona?
Mona, does that help?
That does. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mona.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Appreciate it. Well, when I read your description of the sun, the lake itself, and the sun either coming up or going down over the lake, or when it was raining, I thought, man, she spent a lot of time.
But Larry, you know what is so interesting? So I have just left San Francisco after living there for 25 years, and I have never met as many Midwesterners in any city as I have in San Francisco. There are a lot of Midwesterners there. And what's interesting is when you start talking about this cabin on this lake, everybody from the Midwest has a memory of a cabin on the lake. And, you know, they might have gone to a camp on the lake. They might have gone camping with their family. They might have had a friend whose uncle and aunt had. I mean, what's so interesting, though, is, you know, everybody had a different experience. But at the same time, we all remember the same kinds of things. And, in fact, I remember talking one night late. It was we'd gone out to dinner with friends, and there were two other people there who'd grown up in the Midwest, and we were talking about, you know, the things everyone remembers about those summers, like the burnt hot dogs, you know, the playing Monopoly on rainy days and discovering that the game had all these missing pieces, right? Because it had probably been in the cabin for 40 years. I mean, I think it's something that most people in the Midwest can relate to, and you don't have to have your own cabin. You know what I mean? And
yep.
It wasn't that long ago that even people of modest financial means could own a cabin. You know, I think that that's changing now, unfortunately, you know, but it used to be a near universal experience in the Midwest.
So you certainly write well about that. And what, you know, I wondered about this whole business of going back to a place where you hadn't been there in a long time. And it's the same in a lot of ways, but it's different. Have you had those? You must have had those feelings because you write about them well.
No, I have had those feelings. And I think, and that's another thing. I think those feelings are near universal. I mean, unless you stay in the town or the city that you were born in, but, you know, even then you have a homecoming of sorts. You know what I mean? It might be a high school reunion or a family reunion. Something happens where you're kind of forced to step back and try to look at yourself and your life in an objective way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I read somewhere that that the main reason people say they're trying to lose weight is because of their pictures on Facebook. So obviously they're not doing that for their husband or wife, you know, who already knows what they look like. That's obviously for their old friends, right, from high school or college. So, I mean, I think there's a part of all of us that recognizes that feeling. And one of the ways I tried to keep the series fresh in book six is I thought, why don't I bring a character back to the town who hasn't been there for several years so we can see, you know, how she's changed, how the town has changed, and then how being back there makes her confront things she might not otherwise have had to confront,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And she carries, well, in fact, all the characters, or several of them at least, carry around a lot of guilt. You think guilt is a bigger burden for a younger person? And the characters in the book, the main characters are what I would consider young.
No, I agree. They're all, because this happened 10 years ago, when Quinn was 18, she's 28 now. So she's definitely young. And I think in some ways tragedy is more difficult for younger people because they've experienced less of it often, not all the time. And they just have fewer resources, right, for dealing with it. And so I think what happened for some of these young people is, in a way, part of their lives just stopped after that accident. You know, and of course, Quinn has gone to college. She's built a career. She has a life. Outwardly, she looks successful. But there's a part of her that she just closed off after that accident. And so I thought if we brought her back to the scene of the crime, so to speak, she would be forced to confront that. And it was really interesting writing it because, again, I feel like that's something a lot of us can identify with, you know. There's so much growing that happens during those years, but if you can't really face something that's happened to you, you can sort of, some of that growth, emotional growth, can be somewhat stunted. So by the end of the book, she's a much fuller, richer person than she was at the beginning.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. It was, I was thinking about friends that I may have had way back and then met up with again, and we don't have as much perhaps in common as we did at one point. In her case, oh my goodness, like her very best friend.
Yes.
She comes back, Gabriel, I think his name was.
Yeah, you're right.
Comes back, and she goes to see him, and she's all excited because they were best friends, and now he doesn't want to really seem to have anything to do with her.
I know. And then on the other hand, someone who she disliked in high school and wanted to have nothing to do with, this young woman who, you know, actually, yeah, she's still young. Let's call anyone under the age of 30 young.
Okay? Yes.
Actually, let's make that 40. No. So she, on the other hand, she wants to be friends with Quinn. So Quinn is confused, to say the least. But what she doesn't know is that there are at least three other characters in the novel who are keeping secrets, too. So it's not until the end of the novel, in effect, that that we learn all of their secrets. And then, of course, it makes sense.
Well, and I liked how you kind of went back and forth. You were in the present and then went back 10 years.
Okay, Gary, Larry, that was so much fun because, I mean, let's be honest. High school is such a romantic time in our life, you know? And it's not that we all had a boyfriend or a girlfriend. It's more like just the potential for romance was so great, right? I mean, I remember going to these dances in high school and thinking anything can happen tonight. And, of course, usually nothing happened, right?
Right.
But that sense of possibility, I think that's something that really peaks during those years. So it was really fun to switch back and forth. And I put about 10 scenes in the past during the time Quinn was in high school so we could explore her relationships with Jake. He's her boyfriend who died in the accident, and Gabriel, who was her best friend, who, of course, had unbeknownst to her, wanted to be more than her best friend. And that was so much fun because I think it's one of the most romantic times of life. I mean, it's true that we're immature. We don't always know how to appreciate it. But like I said, the world is your oyster romantically, right?
Well, you know, and as I was reading some of those, I was thinking, I wonder if Mary was an athlete herself or dated an athlete in high school.
Larry, that is a very good point. I didn't even think of that. Well, you know, I didn't run cross country myself, which I make Jake, one of the main characters, do in high school. But I have a daughter who ran cross country in high school. And it's a really fascinating sport, I thought, because on the one hand, you compete as a team. But at the same time, you compete individually, right? And so I found out that the reason a lot of people who like cross country are people who are good athletes but who didn't like playing traditional team sports, you know? And it's a much more, when you're out there running, you can't, you know, you are responsible for your success or failure. You can't blame a call by a coach. You can't blame a play by another teammate. So I thought about, what is it about Jake that makes cross country appeal to him? And what does that say to him about a person? So that was really fun to explore. And because my daughter wasn't a serious athlete when she ran cross country, I found a couple people to interview who had been really serious at the high school and collegiate level. And so I learned a lot about their experiences. And one thing someone told me is, I said, so you loved cross country? And he said, no, I hated cross country. I said, well, why did you do it? And he said, no, he didn't hate it. But he explained that serious runners, have a very complicated relationship with running. So that was interesting, not being a serious runner myself. Unless you consider getting on the treadmill at the health club and going 3 miles an hour as being a serious runner. So, it was fun to kind of get inside their minds.
Well, my daughter, who is a sophomore in high school now, is a cross-country runner. And so that pulled me even closer to into the story because I have attended many cross-country meets.
Oh, well, I bet she is in the best shape of her life. Right.
Yeah, she is. She did it because she was actually more interested in soccer, and she thought cross country would help her with soccer, at least in terms of being able to run back and forth across the soccer field. But she got to really like soccer. But there is a kind of a love-hate relationship.
I know. Well, how can there not be? Like that, those last few minutes of every race just look so miserable, don't they?
I've got several photos of her looking absolutely miserable. She was getting near the end of the race for sure. Well, what's been the response to the book so far?
So it's been positive. I think reading the reviews online, some people are surprised. They said, yes, this was definitely darker than the earlier novels. And I'm not saying that that's going to be my trajectory now, darker novels, but I kind of feel like it's a kind of living, I don't know, the atmosphere feels a little dark right now. So I thought, well, I'll respond to that. And then, you know, and I wanted to make sure that my characters continue to get more complex. When I first discussed what I wanted to do with the series with my husband, when the first book was taking shape and I was thinking about, you know, the kinds of people I wanted to write about, I explained it to my husband, and he paused for a second and he said, so you want to write about nice people being nice to each other? And I said, well, not exactly, but at the same time, I do want to, most of the people in my books are nice people. They're kind people. They're people with a conscience and, you know, a sense of responsibility for their actions. But that doesn't mean there is not room for a couple well-placed villains, right? I mean, they're not just on TV. You and I, I'm sure, know a few in our own lives, right? So, but you're right. For the most part, I am attracted to writing about nice people.
So is the series really over? When I, you know, as I read the last pages, I thought, oh, I wonder what's going to happen with Quinn from now on. And then I see the series is over. Is it really over?
I'm not saying I would never return to Butternut Lake, but I felt like I was ready for a new series, and it also happened to correspond with a change in my life, too, which is that, as I said, after a quarter of a century, we are leaving San Francisco and we're moving back to the Midwest. And I'm hoping that sort of renewed connection inspires me to write another series. Because I feel like you can take the girl out of the Midwest, right? But you can only take her out of it for so long.
Oh, so
back in it.
So we won't be in Butternut Lake for a while, but maybe you'll come back to Butternut Lake at some point.
Absolutely.
And in the meantime, who knows? You don't know yourself yet, huh?
No, I don't. But I'm ready to be inspired. And I was looking. So we're actually moving to Traverse City, Michigan. Are you familiar with that, Larry?
Yep.
And I was looking at a map of it recently, and I saw a lake outside Traverse City called Torch Lake, which, let's be honest, that is just such a romantic name for a lake. And I thought, oh, my God, I could write something called the Torch Lake Trilogy. So never say never, right?
Oh, Mary, it's been delightful talking with you today, and I really enjoyed your book. Thank you so much for writing it, and for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. And it was great meeting your guests. They were terrific.
Well, I tell you what, I hope you sell a lot of books, and I hope we have a chance to visit again sometime down the road, next series maybe.
I would love that.
Thanks, Mary.
Thank you.
Mary McNear is the author, and her book is titled The Secrets We Carried. That's the sixth and, for now, the final in her six-novel Butternut Lake series. Great to have her with us. And so I mentioned earlier, good books and good wine. We'll talk about wine next here on the Ideas Network. You stay with us.